Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, sponsored by the audiobook edition of Will Eisner, A Spirited Life, now available on iTunes and Audible.com, and recorded live from the new media capital of the world and home of Blondie cartoonist Dean Young, Tampa Bay, Florida. When I was a teenager, back during the Ford administration, if you must know, a time when Peanuts was the best thing going in daily comic strips, and years before The Far Side shook up the quiet world of single-panel strips, there was Ziggy. The roly-poly philosophical mensch was widely quoted, appeared on a zillion greeting cards, had his wisdom collected in books, and came to stand for a certain type of post-Woodstock pop philosophy. Now, to be honest, I lost track of my old friend Ziggy over the years. My local paper, the St. Petersburg Times, doesn't carry the strip now, and I honestly can't remember a time it did in the nearly 30 years I've been a reader. So I was honestly surprised to learn that for almost that long, not quite, but almost, the strip has been produced by Tom Wilson Jr., son of Ziggy's creator. And I was saddened to learn of the heartbreaking trip Wilson has been on for the last almost two decades. The story begins first with his dad's illness in the early 90s, forcing Tom Jr. to step in on the strip, then picking up steam with his beautiful wife Susan's diagnosis of breast cancer, followed by 7 years of ultimately futile treatment. And I mean futile, not futile as in old time. Wilson tells his story in a new book, Zigzagging, Loving Madly, Losing Badly, How Ziggy Saved My Life. Tom, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Yeah, Tom, reading your book, I was reminded, first of all, of how much I once enjoyed Ziggy.
Well, I hope you can still enjoy him. He's been out there all those years with all due respect to your local newspaper. Ziggy's still well syndicated around the world. But we're still doing a lot of products, and Ziggy's back in greeting cards with a new line of American Greetings greeting cards. And so he's been, he's still been showing up for work every day. Probably, we're going on 40 years now for Ziggy, actually.
Is it that long? That's incredible.
I believe this summer it'll be 40. Yeah, and I've done Ziggy almost 25, 26 years myself.
Yeah, it reminds me how, in some ways, comic strips are a little like radio. If your local radio station has a show that you love in the morning, you can't understand why nobody else has it. And if your local newspaper doesn't carry that comic strip, you actually don't know it exists, and it's just the nature of the world.
No, you're absolutely right. If I do book signings or talks in different cities, it's amazing how much larger the turnout is if that particular city's newspaper carries Ziggy. There's been so many papers folding over the years, and of course we're only allowed one newspaper per city. If the one that's carrying it goes out, and the other one doesn't pick it up, he's gone from that town, and it's disappointing.
We have this worldwide community. We're all, in each other's pockets, so to speak, but comic strip disappears. You don't know it exists anymore. It's weird that way.
He's there all the year.
Absolutely. And, it's funny. I meant what I said. Reading Zigzagging, seeing the cartoons, I remember, it was just such a blithe spirit, the kind of homespun philosophy, and just a friendly, harmless character who, was very easily enjoyed, and it was kind of fun to, that's why I said it was kind of fun to be reunited with him in the book.
Well, no, thank you. He's played that role for so long. He started out as about 14 papers, I think. 15 papers as America's lovable loser.
Right.
And he's been, you know, every day he's lost a little. Each day he's, you know, shows up for work and does his loser thing. And, you know, it's over all these years of losing, he's become kind of an inspirational character and almost iconic now. And sort of winning for losing and inspiring people in an odd sense. I love that he did that all on his own.
Well, what inspired your dad to create him and to make him the way he became? I know he had a background in greeting cards, but it wasn't entirely that.
Well, no, my dad was always an artist. I mean, he loved cartooning. His first job was at American Greetings late 50s, I'd say. But he always, you know, always loved cartooning, so for many years he tried to get a cartoon syndicated as a political cartoon with the Ziggy character. He didn't have the Ziggy name at the time, I don't think, but he, you know, nobody would take it. I remember he was very frustrated with that. But it would be essentially, Ziggy was an elevator operator. People would get into the elevator and he'd overhear them talking about whatever was going on in, you know, the news and make a comment. And it was kind of a cross between political cartooning and the standard comics page cartooning thing. And I think it was a little ahead of its time. But he carried the character with him, and when he went to work at American Greetings, he brought him out again in I think the first time was a series of small books called Sunbeam Library, and there was this little book he did and illustrated with his character called When You're Not Around, Nothing Goes Right. And that was sort of the genesis of Ziggy. That book sold like 500,000 copies. It was insane. And, you know, one of those copies went to the head of a new syndicate, the Universal Press Syndicate, which at the time only carried one other strip, and that was Gary Trudeau's Doonesbury. So they offered Dad a contract and said, you know, how about doing this as a comic strip? And so he said, why not? And Ziggy just took off from there. Sort of found his way, in an odd way back, you know, into the comics from greeting cards rather than the other way around. Most things go into licensing after syndication.
And why the name Ziggy? Of all the names out there, why did your dad pick Ziggy?
Well, I remember I asked him that once, and he said, you know, and I could identify with this. He said, when I was a kid, you know, our last name Wilson in our small town, I was always the last guy in line to be, you know, for everything, because everything was alphabetical. He said, until this kid, like Ziegler or Zaglinski or something, showed up, moved into town, and then all of a sudden he wasn't the last guy in line. And he said, you know, Ziggy was kind of that character. He was the last guy always in line for things. And he said, so I thought it had to start with a Z. And words like, you know, Billy, Bobby, you know, Jimmy, if they end in a Y or an IE, they're friendly. And this was a friendly character. So he said, I had the Y, I had the Z, and the only name that really fit was Ziggy. it worked for me. I think it made sense. And, you know, you look at him, I can't see him as anything other than Ziggy these days. You know, that's him.
Nothing, yeah. I mean, there's nothing else like Ziggy, that's for sure.
Well, apologies to all real Ziggies out there, people with that name. He did sort of personify that name for so many people over the years as a character. And, yeah, it works for him.
Well, before we come around and talk about Susan and the essence of the book, tell our listeners a little something about being Tom Wilson's son and essentially Ziggy's brother, as you write about in the book.
Yeah, Ziggy was my successful big brother, and we did grow up together. Dad was always working on him, and you know, in addition to his other job at American Greetings, where he was developing products and characters for them, Care Bears was a lot of Strawberry Shortcake. A lot of their lines came out of his group that he started. So he was a busy guy, and I idealized, you know, I idolized him a lot. He was, you know, the most creative, brilliant man I knew. Hmm. And so I found the periods where when he was home and we had time to share, we often, Ziggy was there with us, whether we were, you know, drawing over breakfast or sitting there talking in the car, throwing around ideas. I mean, Ziggy was a part of my relationship with the man I really loved more than anybody. He was my, you know, he was the greatest man I knew. Mm-hmm. Still is. So Ziggy and I think I've spent all of Ziggy's life with him, and he was there for the majority of my life, starting in my teens, and all of that were the three of us together, Dad and Ziggy and I. So it was a very special connection always. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry, Tom. I didn't mean to interrupt. I was going to say, I'm looking at Ziggy, and I'm just thinking about the stories of you saving Ziggy at the Big Boy, drawing with your dad, and I'm thinking, when did it hit you that you had gone from being the young kid saving Ziggy to you got older than Ziggy? Ziggy never changed.
I know, and unfortunately, I've always had more hair than him all my life, and I still have that. But I can credit Dad with that. But no, you know, he doesn't change, and yet I think he, you know, it's part of the fact that, you know, while I'm getting older and grayer, Ziggy's kind of an eternal character to me. I've seen him in a way. I should backtrack and say he has changed a little bit. I've noticed over the years he's gotten a little rounder, a little softer, and more, you know, teddy bear proportion. From the very early ones, but that was a natural evolution for him. It's kind of like, you know, how you start to, you know, people live with their dogs for a long time, they start to look alike. I think he's taken on a little more of the aspects of Dad and I over the years, too, personality, and although my nose isn't quite as large as his, and I do wear pants.
Thank God for that, Tom. Thank God for that. The book is a little vague, and if you don't want to go into detail, I'll understand. But you know, what is it that happened with your dad that caused you to first assist and then ultimately take over Ziggy? And what is the situation today, if I can ask?
Well, I didn't mean it to be vague, because I was trying to describe a kind of a lengthy process, because you know, Dad was such a hardworking person, very charismatic, but at the same time, you know, he developed, it was a gradual thing too, but he, you know, a lot of trouble, health problems, primarily with his heart, but he did have a bout of lung cancer too, and so, you know, and he didn't take the best care of himself. He was always on the go. So, you know, this was... you know, gradually a gradual debilitating process over many years, and always being, you know, associated with him. You know, started out doing a lot of writing with him, and gradually he let me do some of the inking, and then I did more of the inking and more writing. And so it was such a gradual process. It wasn't like one day, you know, here, take over. It was very subtle for me over the course of many years, and then Dad was hit with a very severe stroke, and he's okay now. I mean, he's lost his mobility and a lot of motion on his one side of his body, and he's in a wheelchair. But, you know, it was a series of small strokes and then a large one. And then, as I said, a bout with lung cancer. Dad was a heavy smoker all his life, mm-hmm. and which fortunately has never returned. He did beat that, but after surgery, you know. So I didn't mean to be obscure or, it was just such a gradual process, both seeing Dad's health leave him and gradually getting more and more involved in the process of creating Ziggy over so many years here.
Well, are most of your readers and fans, are they surprised to learn of the storm that you've been through over the years, first with your dad and then, of course, with Susan?
Well, it's a good question. I can't speak for everyone. I know every year we would go as far as the Ziggy side of that. We would go to the big book show every year in New York and sign lithographs, and I would be there assisting Dad, and then gradually, when Dad wasn't well enough to make that trip, I took over and started doing a lot of the signings and the meeting and everything. And people who had seen us every year didn't seem that surprised to me to see me there, because it was such a long, drawn out process. As far as what you referred to was losing my wife to breast cancer, and that was also, that was a very traumatic thing for my family, and we fought breast cancer for a number of years, and that didn't find its way into my work. And so the book was really the first time that I've spoken about that. And it came out, as a result, this book, Zigzagging, was came out of a lot of journaling and just getting through that entire grief process, trying to carry on work and raising my two boys and looking for inspiration from a lot of my sources that I didn't realize were there for me in the past. And I among them, Dad and Ziggy. And so I haven't spoken at length until the book came out, and it was very cathartic, and it was a very raw process. The book, as you say, you've read it. It is not probably doesn't present me as a person in the most flattering way going through this process of dealing with the loss of my wife of many years, and in many ways my greatest strength. But it's all very raw and real, and so I credit the passion that is in this story with that fact that it came out of real-time journalism and journaling and experiences.
I actually thought it was remarkably honest, to tell you the truth. I didn't really see that it made you a bad person. I was surprised how honest you were about how hard it was to deal with things and how you did deal with things, whether it was, letting the bills pay up and the work build up. I mean, you acknowledge you just didn't know how to deal with these things.
Well, it was so real at the time, and it was all captured in real time. And again, it deals with the subject matter that, we never really get over these things. It's just a matter of how do we learn to live with them and keep carrying on. And often a lot of the emotions and feelings and memories are as real to me now as they were when Susan first came down with breast cancer, when she passed away, and when I tried to fight my way back from just basically feeling like I didn't want to get up in the morning and go on anymore. So thank you for that. It's kind of like Ziggy. Ziggy's an honest portrayal of his character. He personifies it, what he is, which is very simple in a very real way. I tried to do the same with the book. Be more, less flattering, more honest, but to me, it was the only way to tell the story.
Susan was treated for 7 years. It's astonishing. She went for the right at the beginning. She went for the radical double mastectomy even before the cancer spread to a second breast. In choosing to do that, do you think she knew somehow what she was in for? That
When you're taken by this news that you have something like this and it's entered in your life and your family, there's no way of knowing what should, you know, I know she didn't know. All I know is, you know, she was a very gentle, sweet, but strong spirit. And when this crisis arrived, all of that strength came out, and she became a very aggressive fighter. She opted for the strongest chemotherapy, the radical double mastectomy. I mean, she did not want to die at all. She did everything double measure to make sure. And I think in large part, that's why, even though we battled this through a couple of remissions and transplant, bone marrow transplants, and you know, all of this chemotherapy, why she did live this long with such an aggressive form of breast cancer. Her spirit really brought her through a lot. In a way, I consider her a survivor in that sense, because I don't know if she didn't have that fighting spirit and that get on the attack right away, I don't know if she would have lasted as long as she did.
Did you, watching this unfold beside her, did there come a point that you lost faith in the treatments and the doctors?
No, we were very much babes in the woods. We were at the mercy of our doctors, in which we trusted, and we believed that, you know, they were doing everything she can, and again, we both stayed very strong throughout the whole process. I'll tell you, just from my perspective, and maybe Susan had some other thoughts, right up until the day she died, you know, I assumed there was, you know, we prayed, we hoped, we fought for a miracle. I never, until she passed, I didn't give up on that miracle right up until the last moments even. Mm. And, I remember thinking, we'll keep fighting. Someday in the future, we'll be sitting together, looking back on this, and realize it was all just a horrible memory, and it was all just but we're still here together. And that sort of vision of that future kind of kept us going. Like when we could have hindsight on this thing. Unfortunately, that didn't arrive, but we didn't lose faith.
Right.
I will say that.
Well, I was going to say, you write in the book about your loss of faith, and it struck me that in the years after Susan passed, that you went through this battle of, you know, feeling abandoned by God, and but then later it seemed like it seems like you had much greater faith after you came to grips with what had happened than you did maybe even while she was getting treatment. That, you know, and part of that, I guess, is part of getting older. A lot of people turn to faith and religion, but am I interpreting that correctly?
Well, yeah, and as I say, I didn't lose faith during all of the treatment, and I never felt that God would abandon us, and Susan certainly was always a source of faith. In fact, you know, she was her religious, she was a preacher's daughter, and she taught me a lot of what I knew. And so it wasn't until it hit, and I felt that, you know, how could, you know, I'm sure we all asked this question, you know, how could somebody who loved God so much and who fought so hard and was, you know, and I say this as such an angel, you know, how could he take away this from us, and, you know, my two children, and leave us like this? And I would say that rather than a loss of faith, I have to, you know, even though I felt that and said that, it was more an anger at God I had. How could this happen? How could you do this to my family? But I came to understand that, you know, the opposite of love is indifference. It's not anger. Mm. So even though I was very angry at God and felt like we had a deal and we were going to, you know, spend this time together, and, you know, you could have her back anytime, why now when we needed her so much? I felt very angry and betrayed by God. And then I realized, you know what, I never did really lose faith. It was the fact that I still had such passion and emotion about this meant that I was still looking to God. It was clouded by, you know, the sense of loss and the anger and that I felt. But I realized that at the end of the day, and I'm sorry if I'm going on too long.
You're
here.
Fine.
I got to the point during the process of realizing that, you know, none of us know how long we have here. We don't know how many years, how many days we have. Anything can happen. And the fact is that I was given a gift. This, you know, when we're born, you know, our years are already established. We may not know what they are. And for the years that this woman had on earth, she was given by God to us, to my sons and I, to be with. And she only had a certain amount of time here on earth, and we were given that. And I saw that as a great gift. You know, again, none of us know how long we have here, but I got the majority of that and the majority of my growing up and the ability to have these wonderful sons with this woman. Mm-hmm. That was God doing something very loving. That's how I saw it. And at the end of the day,
it seemed in your story that one tragedy actually put the other in perspective. That you lost Susan in 2000, obviously in September 11, 2001, had a big impact on all of us. But it affected you in a somewhat different way.
Well, it did. I was again. This was about a year after, and there is a situation that happens with loss where around the any grief or depression that you feel at the time, it tends to get worse around that time each year, like a seasonal disorder type thing. And this was at the peak of feeling that, and I'm sitting there trying to work. Everything seems to be falling apart. And this horrible tragedy takes place on TV, which we all remember watching and seeing this unfold. And it was not so much the tragedy, but watching how people directed themselves towards getting beyond it, and you know, all of the acts of heroism, all of the amazing heroes that we were seeing risking their lives each day to get beyond this, what seemed like the end of the world, and was for many at that time. But there were still people trying to rebuild, save, rescue. I found that very inspiring. That got me, that shook me out of my, what was really a very dark depression at the time. One might think it would add to it, thinking, oh, everything's going wrong. No, I was inspired by the way people were responding to this. All over the world were responding to this tragedy, and here I am sitting here on my butt letting my world fall apart and not doing anything. So it encouraged me. I wrote about it in more detail in the book, but essentially that was what was they say out of the crisis comes the best and the worst of us, and it's what we choose to see. I saw the best of us, and I did. I was also feeling all of that anger and everything, and I felt that I had this horrible thing had been done to me by God, and you know, and taken this wonderful person from us. And I thought, am I really looking at God the way, you know, here we are trying to find who is responsible for this horrible thing? I mean, am I comparing him to a terrorist or something? And I realized how stupid that all was, to be thinking in those terms out of anger and hurt. So in many ways, emotionally and physically, it was it inspired me to see people fighting to bring things back again, and it reminded me of the fighting spirit that Susan had always shown me while she was dealing with crisis and trying to be there for us in the midst of her world falling apart.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tom, let's come full circle. We started talking about Ziggy And let's wrap up talking about Ziggy. Your dad, when he created the character, always imbued the little guy with kind of a little bit of a greeting card philosophy, if you will, as a result of his background, I think, in that business. And he certainly knew what sold. Now, when you stepped in, did you have to move towards that, or did it move with you?
You know, it's a good question, and I think the answer to that would be I let the character lead the way. While I had a lot of empathy, I knew the character well and what he was. I always tried to let him be my greatest editor and also be the guide on how he would respond and react to things. And I think that was a good approach because it kept him true to his character that he was created with to have. While the licensing industry has shifted and, over time things change, as you pointed out, Ziggy, and not just physically, but as far as his personality and his character, Ziggy has remained the same in spite of, markets changing, all of us changing. And I think that's that was certainly a sense of comfort to me. And I think people find that comforting and inspiring too, that Ziggy can keep showing up for work day after day, even though things are tough and changing sometimes faster than we can manage them. He's kind of a simple ray of light in a way.
I got it.
It was not a hard transition for me to make because the character was he is so strong. I admire that most. It's not so much, while it is a humorous strip, it's not so much about the humor. It's not so much about the situations he's in. It's the character is what's carried him through all of these years, and I've always tried to stay aware of that fact.
And last question, and we'll let you go. You've been very gracious with your time. Have you ever felt boxed in over the years? Pardon the pun. Have you ever felt boxed in by Ziggy being a single panel and not a strip with three boxes to fill? Have you ever wanted to make a change?
I've thought many times about that because just the practicality of the marketplace. You have very limited space for single panels on the comics pages. You could increase your readership dramatically because of the vacancies. There's so many more strips per paper. So, being a single panel, it's like social Darwinism here. You're fighting for a very limited turf over many years. And so from that standpoint, I thought, we could get a lot more papers, we could be out more, but Ziggy is such a simple thing, and he tells his, I like the way that he basically speaks to us from his panel, rather than making the reader feel more voyeuristic and, looking in the window, essentially, in somebody's home or watching this unfold by a strip format. He worked best as a one-shot deal. Hitting with his character and everything in the simplest, most direct way possible. So, again, staying true to the character. It might be more lucrative going to a strip form, but I don't think in the long run it would serve the character as well.
All right. Good answer. Well, folks, listen, you can order cartoonist Tom Wilson's new book, Zigzagging, Loving Madly, Losing Badly, How Ziggy Saved My Life, from great bookstores everywhere or online at mrmedia.com, mrmedia.com. And while Ziggy is in more than 800 newspapers worldwide, if the comic strip is not in yours, call your local editor and ask for it by name. How's that, Tom?
That's perfect. Thank you. I appreciate that.
My pleasure. And Tom, thank you so much for coming on the show today, talking about the subject that you did, and the pleasure to get to talk to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me today.
My pleasure. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. And folks, for more interviews with your favorite comic book, comic strip, and graphic novel artists and writers, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with Joss Neufeld, Patrick McDonnell, Ray Billingsley, Jerry Scott, Rick Kirkman, Jim Borgman, John Rosenberg, Stefan Pastis, Mark Tatulli, Mort Walker, Dennis Kitchen, Drew Friedman, Gabe Gibbons, Joe Sinnott, Howard Cruz, Mark Chiarello, Freddie Williams, Gene Colan, and many more. And I like to list them all because I enjoy talking to all of them. Subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. I do that myself sometimes. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.facebook.com/andelman or twitter.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate you give up a little piece of your day and come spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.